Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with Bijal Shah, MD, MS, an associate member in the Department of Malignant Hematology at Moffitt Cancer Center, to discuss the FDA approval of brexucabtagene and autoleucel for patients with relapsed refractory B-cell acute lymphoblastic leukemia. On October 1, 2021, the FDA approved brexucabtagene and autoleucel for patients with relapsed refractory B-cell precursor ALL. The approval was based on findings from the Phase 1-2 ZUMA-3 trial, which showed that the complete response and complete response with incomplete blood count recovery rate was 70.9%, which included a CR rate of 56.4%. As of the data cutoff, 31% of patients who achieved a CR and CRI were in ongoing remission without subsequent allogeneic stem cell transplant. The median duration of response with censoring at subsequent allogeneic stem cell transplant, relapse-free survival, and overall survival was 12.8 months, 11.6 months, and 18.2 months, respectively. The median OS was not reached in patients who achieved a CR and CRI. These data are unprecedented in such a heavily pretreated population of patients with ALL, said Shah. The magnitude of benefit in OS with brexucabtagene autoleucel in this patient population has never been achieved in prior trials in this setting, marking a significant advance for the field, added Shah. In our exclusive interview, Shah discussed the FDA approval of brexucabtagene autoleucel in relapsed refractory B-ALL, key findings from the pivotal ZUMA-3 trial, and next steps with CAR T-cell therapy in the field. Thank you so much, Dr. Shah, for joining us on an episode of Onc Live On Air. Happy to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
To start, could you just speak to sort of the phase one and now the phase two data that we've seen with brexucabtagene in relapsed refractory B-cell ALL?
So this was a study of CAR T-cell immunotherapy for patients who had failed two lines of therapy or were primary refractory in terms of their disease. We left the definition of what is primary refractory up to the investigator. And so that could include someone who simply had no response to their frontline therapy or individuals who were relapsing very quickly after instituting that frontline therapy. We observed about a third of the patients coming on as primary refractory, and the rest of the patients were relapsing after two or more lines of therapy. The median prior lines was two, with patients having received up to eight prior lines of therapy. This includes allogeneic stem cell transplant in almost half of the patients, same for blinatumomab, almost half of the patients. Is around 40-ish, 45, 42% for both, and then inotuzumab in about a quarter of the patients. And so these were definitely, by and large, more heavily pretreated patients. As I mentioned earlier, about a third of the patients were primary refractory coming on. We did require patients to have morphologic disease, and so they all had to have greater than 5% blast. We did not allow enrollment of anyone who had MRD. In fact, it was one of the patients who initially enrolled, ultimately wasn't able to make it to the CAR T-cell infusion because we had that strict cutoff for having at least 5% blast. In truth, the median blast marrow burden was around 60% for those enrolled. So pretty hefty tumor burdens, most having more heavily pretreated disease. With this population, we observed a little over 70% in terms of the CR, CRI rate. So really exciting from that standpoint. The majority of these remissions were true CRs, so about 56% or so were true CRs. And of those who achieved a CR or CRI, essentially all of them were MRD negative. We had one patient where we couldn't assess MRD, but all of the other patients achieving a CR, CRI were MRD negative. And so the MRD tool that we used for this study was multicolor flow, and so with a sensitivity of 10 to the minus 4. For those patients who achieved a CR or CRI, the median duration of response was a little over 12 months. And when we censored for subsequent transplant or for those patients who wanted to resume a TKI, for example, in the setting of Ph-positive disease, when we censored for those patients, we observed no difference in the duration of remission. That is, suggesting that those events weren't contributing meaningfully to the duration of response observed. In fact, when we looked out with about 16 months of follow-up, a little over 30% of the patients were still in ongoing CR. So we feel like this is pretty powerful data and excited that the FDA agrees. Coupled to that duration of response, what we see is a median overall survival of 18 months. And again, when we think about this population of primary refractory disease or of multiply relapsed disease and heavily pretreated disease, from where I'm sitting, this is unheard of. We have not achieved this magnitude of overall survival in any of our previous trials in the relapsed refractory space, whether that be with single agent blinatumomab, single agent inotuzumab, and the like. And so this is very, very exciting for me. It means we're finally able to bring a therapy really with just tremendous potential to mediate an anti-tumor response, as we've seen in large B-cell lymphoma, as we've seen in mantle cell lymphoma, but now in acute lymphoblastic leukemia. I think whenever we talk about CAR T-cell therapy, we always have to talk about the risks, not just the benefits, though. And so when we talk about risks, we talk about those largely in the context of what we expect when we overactivate the immune system. So cytokine release syndrome, fever, hypotension, in some cases, even organ injury. This can be seen with CAR T-cell immunotherapy. You know, with early intervention with tocilizumab and or steroids, we really were able to push the rate of cytokine release syndrome down to the 25% ballpark in terms of severe events. And that's pretty good. You know, when I look across studies for acute lymphoblastic leukemia, I think that that is consistent with what we see in pediatrics, for example. So very happy with where we've landed. Certainly, I think there's room to do better. I'd love it to be zero. Even patients still get all the benefit, but none of the toxicity. But we've got a ways to go there. The same goes for neurologic toxicities. And perhaps more than CRS, I think this is where we really made our biggest dent. You know, whether that's a reflection of intervening earlier with tocilizumab and steroids, or whether that's a reflection of really focusing our interventions when we talk about the management of neurotoxicity, really focusing our interventions to steroids, that is no tocilizumab for those individuals who are experiencing confusion or other evidence of neurologic side effects. It's hard to know, but we were able to reduce the rate to around 25% for severe neurotoxicity. Now, what do I mean by reduce the rate? When we look across other studies that have been done in adults with acute lymphoblastic leukemia, the rate is upwards in the 40 percentile range for severe neurotox. So this for me was a major step in the right direction and really excited to be able to say that. Now, we did have one death from neurotoxicity. This was a case of brain edema with herniation. So it is important to stress that there can still be rare events that culminate in bad outcomes. We did also see, evidence of sepsis and infection, as you might otherwise see in someone who's receiving therapy. But when we look at all of these events, right, when we talk about really looking over the 30 or 60 day kind of range in terms of, what are we seeing in terms of CAR T-cell therapy and the toxicity observed, it's still low relative to what we might see with our other agents. And so when we look at the rate of mortality with CAR T-cell immunotherapy, and it's not just this trial, when we look across multiple trials, the rates of death due to cytokine release syndrome, due to neurotoxicity, are generally quite low, less than 5%. When we talk about CAR T-cell immunotherapy, it is important to understand that there is chemotherapy, meaning fludarabine and cyclophosphamide, that is bundled into this. And so with that, we also have to be cognizant of low blood counts, in particular low white blood cell counts, and the risk of infection. Still, even when we add all of those things into the numbers, thankfully, the rate of death is still quite low, and I think certainly comparable to what we see with other agents like inotuzumab and blinatumomab. So again, from where I'm sitting, this is a major, major, major step forward for the treatment of ALL. I think one of the things that we might try to do as we move forward is figure out how to implement this therapy in earlier lines and with lower disease burden. I think as we do that, we're likely to be able to come in when patients are less sick, when we have to worry less about an infection. And with that lower disease burden, I think we're going to get better CAR T-cell expansion. We saw that on this trial, at least down to 5% blasts, and lower toxicity. And that's the perfect sort of formula of low toxicity and high efficacy that we want for this therapy. And so that's how I hope to see this therapy move forward. None of this is purely my imagination. We're seeing this same approach play out in the pediatric leukemia space, where Kymriah has been approved up to the age of 26. we saw Lori Schultz share some of this data, called the Pediatric Real World Consortium data set. She had presented these data at ASH last, and either undetectable blasts at the time of infusion or less than 5% blasts at the time of infusion, these low disease burden patients, I mean, their outcome is fantastic, upwards of 50 to 70% long-term, disease-free survival and overall survival, but also with lower toxicity. And so kind of just really drives home this idea that we actually may be able to get the best of both worlds as we begin thinking about CAR T-cell immunotherapy in these low disease burden settings. It also means that we have to figure out how better to get patients there. And so when we think about inotuzumab and blinatumab, these other things, I mean, none of that leaves our sort of treatment paradigm. And so we get sort of locked into these sort of one or the other kinds of thinking, these sort of mutually exclusive treatment approaches. And I would say that that doesn't have to be the case. I think that we have to be open to exploring these options of what I call novel or optimal cytoreduction, and then CAR T-cell immunotherapy. There may even be things that we do after the CAR. Certainly right now, the big debate is whether to do a stem cell transplant after CAR T-cell immunotherapy. Maybe that will be the answer. But even before we get to that stage, we've given novel agents like blinatumomab after CAR and found it to work quite well. And these are people who truly relapse after the CAR T-cell immunotherapy. But understanding that blinatumomab can be functional in this space tells me that we can start also thinking creatively about what it means to come up with a maintenance platform if there's some concern we have. Let's say there's some very, very, very low level of disease after CAR T-cell immunotherapy. We can start to really begin to start thinking about how we can optimally manage that, knowing what we know about blinatumomab and its activity in low disease burden settings. And so I guess what you're hearing me say when I talk about the future is it's not 5 years from now, it's now. And we have these incredible, now therapies at our disposal. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this plays out and really excited that, we get to add this new therapy to our treatment paradigm.
Now that it is approved, is there anything else that you would really like to emphasize to treating clinicians, maybe community oncologists who will be, referring these patients to you?
It's always the same advice, refer early. I think there are things that we do in the academic setting, whether it's molecular MRD testing, whether it's sort of more comprehensive genetic testing of the leukemia to try and predict what's coming in the future, or whether it's just simply trying to understand how to optimize these novel agents and now CAR T-cell therapy, as part of that treatment paradigm. I think referring early is the secret to having, access to all of those approaches for our patients. It really opens the door. And then again, if transplant is needed, we've also got their HLA testing. We sort of have this ability to better adapt to how unpredictable this disease can be. And that's really what I think myself and all of my colleagues want to be able to do to help assist in the care of these patients.
Thank you so much, Dr. Shah. It was a pleasure.
Likewise.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.